This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
Welcome to the award-winning Interest in Health and Safety podcast, making health and safety as important as everything else we do in business. And now your host, health and safety specialist, mentor and speaker, Colin Nottage.
Hi there, it's Colin Nottage here and welcome to the Interesting Health and Safety podcast. So this is the third episode in this great little mini-series that we've been doing with Dr. David Gold and Stuart Hughes. The first episode, basically David and Stuart introduced themselves and talked a bit about their careers, you know, where they've been, how they got into health and safety, which is really, really great. The second episode was very much focusing in on their paper and the work, the great work that they've done, you know, looking at the effects that that COVID has had on the OSH profession. And you know, some of the, I suppose, you know, some of the issues, some of the problems, very much a discussion document. The whole idea of the paper was to get people to really think about, you know, what impact it's had, you know, and how it's had, you know, what it's done to the businesses that they work in. You know, something of real value, I see, to challenge the way that you think about health and safety in your particular organization, in your business. Now, this episode is absolutely wonderful because this is just them just talking about the future. This is them talking about where they see health and safety, the health and safety profession going, probably where it needs to go, how it needs to adapt, how it needs to change. You know, the things that we need to do differently to stay relevant. And, you know, I have an opportunity to give some input as well, which is really nice. So I'd like to hand over to David and Stuart. Thank you very much. Stuart, David, it's absolutely fantastic to have you back on the show. This is our third episode of a little mini series that we've done. That's been based on the excellent work that you've done with the paper. You know, just challenging, you know, what was happening to the profession as part of, you know, sort of the COVID-19 pandemic, and some of the issues that the profession is facing. And one of the things that we said that we would do is we'd have a bit of a discussion, a bit of a chat about the future of the profession and where we think it maybe needs to go, the some of the direction we think it may need to take, you know. And I just really want to have a really great chat about this. So I'm gonna go over to you first, Stuart, and just get your view and your opinion. And I think what will happen is we'll just naturally evolve into a chat about this. But you know, if you kick things off, that'd be great.
And Colin, thanks for having us back. It's a pleasure to talk to you again, as always. And I think, you know, as we discussed and as we spoke about the paper set down some challenges for the OSH profession and the OSH professional. In terms of, you know, I think some of the elements are getting back to the core of what's important. And I think some of the other elements are about leaving some stuff behind. So I feel that we spend quite a lot of time talking in an echo chamber. And one of my big bugbears at the moment is this safety bickering, I suppose I'll call it, with safety one, safety two, safety differently, any other version of safety, something you can think of, that actually we need to stop is my honest opinion. I think mm-hmm. there's elements within all of these kind of theories and models that are helpful. But I think the internal conflict in the profession can be useful if we're making progress as a result of it, but sometimes it just feels like we are seeing who can shout the loudest and trying to convince people that we're better than others. And I think, you know, one of the things I've kind of spoken about recently in an article that I did was we keep just pushing safety at people. We use it in absolutely everything, because if we don't say it, people won't realize what we do. And like, I'm quite a firm believer that safety is a byproduct. You know, if you've got the right culture, if you've got strong leadership, if you've got you know, good productivity, safety forms part of all of that. And I think part of our challenge as a profession is to
is to fight our way to the centre and to be, you know, seen as that profession that is enabling, and that we're driving, you know, flourishment and thriving in the workplace. And actually, let's get rid of all of these campaigns to zero and all of these things about the absence of X or Y. Stop focusing on what we are creating and generating and enabling. And I felt really smug the other day because I came up with a line that I want to start another article off with, which is the problem with zero is it has a hole in it. And I was quite pleased with myself when I came up with that. So yeah, stand by. I've got that whirring away in my brain to write something on. But I think the challenge that we really have is, you know, you'll hear VUCA bandied about a lot. You know, the world's got more volatile, it's uncertain, et cetera, et cetera. You know, there's a greater level of ambiguity. It's not easy for me to say. And complexity. And I think that's fair. I think that, you know, the external environment is more challenging than perhaps it's ever been in my lifetime. And we do need to bend and we need to flex and we need to make sure that, you know, the OSH professional is technically savvy, so understands, you know, the world of legislation and regulation and the value of compliance, but not compliance for compliance sake. So, you know, we should be pushing and challenging where rules and regulations don't make sense. I also think that we should be working on a broader range of skills. So once you've got your safety badges and you've got your framework of technical competence, we should be broadening the what we call in the power skills or the softer skills, you know, through communication. But we should also be broadening the horizon. So, you know, I'm sure David will talk to the fact that, you know, there's many routes into the safety profession and people come from a varied range of backgrounds into it. And I think unite around a common cause that they want to improve things for people as a whole. Mm-hmm. And I think that's worthy. And I don't think we should lose sight of that, but we shouldn't. I don't think we should be satisfied with where we are. You know, UK numbers, you know, they're at a plateau. What's really making a change? Where's the big innovations coming from in safety? How are we, you know, moving with, you know, worlds that are in some ways more complex than other things? Simplification seems to be, you know, quite pushed. And how do you get rid of all of this safety clutter that we've generated? Mm-hmm. You know, there's a value in a checklist when a checklist, you know, performs the task it's supposed to do. There's not a value in a checklist when it's the checklist of the checklist, if that makes sense. So I think there's a few bits we need to be careful of. I think the global pandemic has shone a light on the value of the occupational safety and health profession and what good OSH people can deliver into organizations from a people-centric sustainability viewpoint. Mm-hmm. But we don't want it, like, the time now is for action. So it's all good to keep talking about that, but if we just keep talking about it, we're not doing anything. And what we need to see is that sustained, right, okay, like, where's all the good cases out of this? Where's all of the evidence that's actually right? The OSH professional has been at the heart of the organization, has been helping the leadership take the right turns, navigate through this difficult period well, and has brought us out of the other side in an effective way. What's the evidence that we've actually, you know, not just steadfast and held where we are with, you know, whether you're looking at the absence of stuff or you're in a learning organization and you've acquired new knowledge, but actually where have we gone beyond that? Mm-hmm. What are the bits that we've learned from this whole kind of, you know, 2 year if not longer episode, and where are we putting that back in? And I think the other element is, how do we get safety to be a critical part of curriculums outside of safety? So, you know, if you go off and do your MBA, what do you learn about safety? Because if we're saying it's part of leadership, it's part of operational management, it's part of good design, then why is it not in those syllabuses? Why is it not a critical element of that learning? Mm-hmm. Because fundamentally, you know, and the profession might shoot me for this, and it's fine. Like, I'll draw the target on my back. We shouldn't have a need for occupational health and safety if we get all of that other stuff right. It should just be integrated into the way sustainable business is delivered. Now, I don't think that's a promised land, and I don't think you're ever going to get there, because safety is not something you can win or complete or finish. It's an ongoing process of continuous improvement. But actually, I think if we can drop away from the need for a specific department to make sure all of that is being done and it's interlinked throughout an entire organization, you have a much better ecosystem that people work in. And it actually, I think that is a much better delivery model of it. But that is, you know, that's my one person's opinion, popular or unpopular, but we know.
There's a lot in there, and David, we'll come to you shortly. But, you know, I think, you know, when I look back at my career, I think the most effective time I had in my career on a large scale was when I was working for one of the large quarrying companies in the UK. And we actually reduced our health and safety department from about 45 people down to 7. Okay. And people said, how on earth can you be serious about health and safety if you reduced it that much? And I said, because what we actually did is we invested in the management, and we actually upskilled the management. And actually all of a sudden they didn't have that resource that they were almost relying on. They had to do it themselves. But being supported slightly differently because they had the skills. And we did a lot of work with the union, you know, TUC reps and invested a lot of time and effort into those. And so all the support was actually happening within the site rather than it being this external thing that was coming in. And so I really get what you're saying there about making it just part of the way we do things. I do get a little bit frustrated, and I'll be interested in your view on this, David. I get a little bit frustrated when you hear that, you know, safety has to be on the top of every agenda meeting, you know, and I just think, you know, so what, we talk about it for a few minutes at the beginning of the meeting and then get onto other stuff. You know, why aren't we just talking about health and safety all the way through the agenda as part of how we're going to do this project well, or how we're going to do this particular job well, and stop even siloing it in an agenda? What are your guys' views on that? But David, what's your view on that?
Well, I'm going to take it from a little different perspective. But okay. I completely agree with what both of you said, first and foremost, and that is this whole idea that safety should be integrated into everything we do. Mm-hmm. And the profession, if we want to call it a profession, which I cannot call it a profession, but the professions that make up the safety and health professional, if I can say it that way, basically should be striving toward that integration. They shouldn't be looking out for themselves. They should be looking out for everybody else. The analogy is quite simple. When we're walking with a young child and we come to a railroad crossing, or we come to a pedestrian crossing on the road, it's not a question of saying, okay, stop, now we have to think about safety, now we're going to do this. We want to instill in that child that anytime they come to a road, anytime they come to a situation like a railroad crossing or whatever it may be, or the edge of a pier or something else, that they're automatically, their behavior is taking into account the risks around them and they're adjusting appropriately. And therefore safety is integrated. So if I'm walking on the side of a windy pier and the wind is blowing in a certain direction, I shouldn't be thinking about doing risk assessments. I should be thinking about what is the safest way to walk here so I'm not going to get into trouble. So this whole thing about integration. And I also have some difficulties with this concept of safety first, which you see on construction sites. And it's ubiquitous. It's everywhere in the world you see this kind of thing, usually in English, in the most backward countries of the world. Backward is the right word. The most developing countries of the world that don't speak a word of English, you see safety first. And I'm saying to myself, well, if it's safety first and productivity second, and the company doesn't survive, and there is no company, there is no safety first. So we should be talking, there should be a catchy sort of way, like Stewart's Donut. You know, we should be thinking about a way, a catchy sort of way of talking about this integration that you're talking about, and that in a business meeting, safety should be not an element, a headline on the agenda, but it should be working its way all through the different elements of the agenda if we're going to achieve it. But let me start coming at this from a little different perspective. In preparation for today's discussion, I just, in 2 or 3 minutes, I just sort of brainstormed myself. And I was trying to think about the different professions that make up the safety and health professional. Who is the safety and health professional? What is the safety and health professional? So if you think about occupational medicine, occupational nursing, occupational health, workplace health promotion, rehabilitation, industrial hygiene, occupational hygiene, we're not into safety yet. This is only on the health side of it. Safety engineering, risk management, safety leadership, process safety, risk awareness raising, training and education, resilience, disaster management. Okay. These are all different ways that people come into the profession. And there are many other ways that they come into the profession. But I would challenge the concept of the profession. It's sort of like a federation of different counties that make up a state. We all come from different perspectives, and we're all working on safety and health from our different perspective. Everybody has their field of expertise. They're a generalist, they're a specialist, but we need to bring it together. And I think one of the problems when an institution only looks at safety, but it doesn't look at health, when most of the situations that are occurring today, if we really document it carefully, are health issues, or there is an interrelationship between the health issue, for example, high levels of stress and an increased level of incidence. So, I mean, the interrelationship between safety and health and environment and other issues are omnipresent. And unfortunately, if we only focus on the engineering side of it, if we only focus on the safety side of it, I think we are selling short the individuals that it's our job, it's our profession, if I can use the word profession, to protect. So one of the things that I want to think about is how do we better integrate safety into the entire world of work? So the worker is doing things safely. And if you think about the Bradley curve, which I think is a very solid piece of work that was done by DuPont, if I can mention DuPont on a podcast. Yeah. Basically, when we're looking at the idea, when everybody is thinking about each other's safety, when we have a situation where people aren't looking at, this is the law, we have to follow the law, but everybody has the feeling, well, I want you next to me and I want the person 3 doors down all be able to go home safe at the end of the day, and safety is integrated, and very few companies are actually there. Mm-hmm. That's where we want to be. And one of the things we also need to think about, and it's something that I feel very strongly about, and that is we can't just look at one country. Granted, the UK has provided, or the broader, the British Empire, if you like, in some ways, the former British Empire, has provided a great deal of leadership in safety and health and has been a world leader in safety and health. But the world evolves and we need to take on a world perspective. And frankly, I would like to see the UK maintain this position of leadership as far as the field of occupational safety and health is concerned. But I think we need to work to think about how people think beyond the borders. We need to think about the psychology, the sociology of safety. The one profession I didn't talk about is the occupational psychologist. And they're part of the game as well, because we need to look at things like behavioral safety. And in that perspective, Stuart talked a little bit about the idea of bringing safety into other professions, or bringing the concept of safety, for example, into an MBA program or into other programs as well. But we even have to think about, for example, medical doctors. To what extent are they aware of safety and health and related topics? My brother, who is a practicing internist in the western part of the United States in California, I asked him how many hours of occupational health did he have in his 4 years of medical school? Mm-hmm. 4 hours mm-hmm. of training in occupational health. Whereas if you go into French-speaking Africa, a great deal of their curriculum is in occupational health. They become, there's a profession that are occupational doctors or médecins du travail in French. And they have a large amount of safety. But if you look at the médecins du travail and you ask them, the occupational doctor, as you would call it in British English, if you ask them how much work have they done in the field of psychosocial issues at work, maybe an hour or two in a full curriculum to become an occupational doctor. Now I've changed that in a couple of African countries. It's been part of my work. I spent 16 years in and out of Africa trying to build on that. But the idea that people didn't understand the notion of stress and the interrelationship of stress and stresses, as we've talked about before, and these being causal factors of accidents and incidents and a variety of different situations. So we have to take on the world perspective. We have to understand, I mean, we do a SWOT analysis in a company. We do a SWOT analysis maybe in an organization, but are we doing a SWOT analysis globally? Do we understand where different people are coming from? And Stuart and I had the excellent opportunity of sharing our time on the vice presidency of IOSH with a dynamic young guy from Africa. And this guy, he's from Nigeria, and he really cares about promoting occupational safety and health, but he comes at it from a different way. And when we talked about, and we brought this up before, about some of the things that happened during the pandemic and people all of a sudden finding themselves working from home. And Coyote, this guy from Africa, he basically said, we've never talked about working from home before. This caught us completely blindsided. We didn't have the wherewithal to organize ourselves and to protect the workers when they were outside of the workplace. I think the issue of academia, let's not talk about academia. Let's talk about training the individual who's going to assume the role to try to prevent accidents, prevent diseases, to work with people, to deal with the issue of safety and health, to create safety is something that becomes very, very important. And what type of curriculum should there be? Is there some standard goalposts or some standard, let's not even say goalposts, standard waypoints that we should have in place, some standard programs? And I think in the UK, we're filling the gap with programs such as the programs that IOSH is building or NABOSH or British Safety Council to do that. But again, looking worldwide at what becomes a safety and health professional and how they're educated to do that. And is a safety professional who's done a vocational degree compared to a safety professional who's done a bachelor's degree compared to a safety professional who's done a PhD or has no degree at all? How do we balance that sort of thing? And how do we work together? How do we make that whole sort of thing happen? Another point that Philip made that I'd like to, Stuart made, that I'd like to perhaps talk about, and that is the issue of leadership, okay? And leadership, it should be the idea of not counting accidents, not looking retrospectively and looking at lagging indicators, but we should be looking at how do we look forward to create safety and not create safety with us as the leader of creating safety, but instilling in the boardroom, being part of the boardroom, being integrated into the boardroom, this whole concept of creating safety. How do we move forward with safety, health? And there's another little brother on the SH platform, which is the environment. Mm-hmm. And the environment is something that many of us find that we have a certain responsibility for, and oftentimes people don't know anything about it. Mm-hmm. And the safety and health professional may be struggling that way. So we need to think about helping the leadership. We need to think about this full integration, but one of the things that keeps surfacing in my mind, it was very interesting when I worked at the UN, we talked about corporate social responsibility. It was kind of the new kid on the block when CSR first surfaced. And ironically, in Europe, there were two types of CSR. And one type of CSR, which was basically embraced by the European Union, was CSR was extramural. Okay, it is what was the community, what was the organization or the company or the industry doing for the people who lived outside the walls of the community, of the enterprise? Mm. So how are we helping the community? And the other more global perspective is it incorporates safety and health. It incorporates everything we talk about when we talk about, you know, the human capital, when we talk about social sustainability. That's the type of CSR that I would prefer to embrace. And I would hope that our friends and colleagues in safety and health would also embrace this kind of thing, that corporations have this responsibility, not to have safety, but to have an integrated safety and health sort of activity that builds into the fiber of the individual what safety and health is all about. So I've ranted and raved a little bit for time. I've got a question
for you guys then. So, you know, and I just wondered, you know, how you feel about this. So, because I feel that the role is almost too big for one individual to do it properly. Okay. And you look in the medical profession. Okay. You know, a doctor doesn't know everything. Okay. And what they do is they refer to specialists if there's a, you know, if there's a particular problem. Now, I'm not for 1 minute saying the National Health Service in the UK has got things right, but should we have a structure within our profession where we refer more, to people that actually understand stuff better?
My solid response to this is absolutely. Okay. If I look at my own background, I was an emergency paramedic. I was seeing, it was sort of a parallel track for me. I was teaching paramedics, and I was seeing a need for preventing the type of accidents that I was treating as an emergency paramedic. And I got into this field. And I found in this field that it was a very, very interesting sort of thing. I built my background a little bit, but on my way, on my professional journey, I took a degree, a master's degree in occupational education to try to figure out how to educate people to change their behavior, to change their thinking, to change the corporate structure, to change, to build the sort of things that we're talking about today on a regular basis. How do we change the attitude of people? How do we raise awareness with people? And how do we do it effectively so people are going to remember it? And then eventually, I got a PhD in occupational safety and health engineering with all kinds of practical experiences filling in the gaps. But if you would ask me, what is my specialty? I have a number of different areas. And when in the UN, I had to develop certain areas. So diving safety around the sea are specialized areas for me. Training and education, occupational safety and health is the, if you like, it's the jewel in my crown. It's the thing that I practice. It's the thing that I work with on a regular basis with people skills. I know something, but not at a highly detailed level, for example, about construction safety. I've worked in construction safety. I've done the same thing in mining safety. But I'm not a specialist in the area of construction safety or mining safety. And when there is a question, you know, for example, what is the best way of supporting a roof so it doesn't collapse in a mine? Are there advantages in a Ma-Pa type mine in China of putting timber up compared to a hydraulic roof system that you might see in Germany? And how can we bring some of the concepts of the technology to China to save lives in China? I don't have the wherewithal, the engineering background to be able to do that side of thing. I need to turn to a specialist. I have a background also in psychology and psychosocial issues at work, but I'm not a psychiatrist. I'm also not a psychologist. So there has to be a time where we are able to signpost, and we should be because the profession is so broad, the list I gave you earlier, the profession is so broad, with so many different people that are contributing to the profession, we should be able to turn to other people. For example, let's say that I've got a situation where there's been an illness in one of my workplaces that I'm dealing with, and I think it's foodborne. And I know that Stuart has a background from in food safety. You know, it actually came into the profession of that. It would behoove me as a professional to turn to someone who has more competencies than I do to be able to help me with it. To think we are the be all and end all of every question about occupational safety and health, I think puts the people we're working with at risk. We need to be able to refer, we need to be able to signpost. I hope I've answered your question, Colin.
Where do you see it, Stuart?
Well, I'm not going to disagree with David in terms of the need for collaboration. I think scope creep is massive, Colin. You see these, mm-hmm. you know, you have to unjargon the job titles, don't you? When you're looking now, you know, on LinkedIn and someone's got a QHSE TP495 job title, and you're like, okay, there's some stuff in there I don't know what they do, you know. Mm-hmm. How are you across, you know, quality, safety, assurance, environment, security, risk, you know, whatever it might be. I think they are, you know, broader than broad, if you like. Mm-hmm. And I do worry about that, you know, periodically, that actually we're trying to do too much. You know, can you do occupational health, general health, safety, welfare, well-being, you know, risk management well, you know, if you've got to do all of those things? And I am proud, very, very proudly a generalist. Like, I like the idea of, you know, working with the organization on strategy, on the learning and development, and on, you know, the problem solving. But I like doing it by asking really good questions. I consider myself a facilitator, mm-hmm. you know, and there are plenty of times where I am, you know, treading water in the deep end, and the waves are like, you know, over my nose, if you like. And I am, you know, you kind of go, well, I'm out of my depth. It's not something I can, you know, contribute towards in an effective way, but I know who I can pull together. I know where I can go and get a DSEER expert. I know where I can go and get somebody in, you know, ergonomics as an expert to come in, but I can work with them. I can help them understand the organization. I can help them understand the intent of what we're trying to achieve. And I can help them then make whatever their suggestions and recommendations are, you know, and part of my role, as I see it, is like I then translate that back into the organization in a way that it can be digested and consumed and ultimately used. And I think that's what we have to make sure that the safety professional is doing. You know, there's a big thing for me that I really struggle to get my head around. And if you've, you know, if you watch Little Britain, you'll remember the character where just like computer says no. You know, someone would come in and want something, they'd tap away the keyboard, computer says no. Mm-hmm. And you kind of get this feeling that that's what safety's got an image of, like, oh, you can't do that. Mm-hmm. Oh, you can't do that. Oh, you can't do that. Well, it's a nonsense, right? We need to live in a world where there is an appetite for risk, because mm-hmm. if we didn't, we'd have never have taken flight for the first time. We'd have never shot a man to the moon. You know, Elon Musk wouldn't be like working out the way to make space travel effective. We need to be able to take risks. The guy that went up and jumped off the side of a platform, you know, basically on the edge of orbit, yep. and came tumbling back to Earth in his super suit, and then, you know, parachuted back to the ground, there'll have been a massive amount of safety calculations in that to enable it to happen. So when somebody says to you, well, you can't climb a ladder anymore, you think like, what? Like, how have we got to this? Because that is not what safety should be about. And this public perception of it really concerns me. So, you know, I think if you ask a member of the public, should somebody die at work doing their job? No, would be a pretty common answer. So there isn't a lack of an appetite for a safe working environment and for people understanding how to be safe in their work environment. What there's a lack of an appetite for is people being told exactly what to do. Mm. You know, human beings are free thinking. They like to make their own decisions. And as much as some of those are free or not, you know, that we could probably go back to a project I'm cool and get Simon on the case for that. But the thing for me is that, well, how do we correct that public perception of the value of occupational safety and health? Because that to me is the fundamental bit, that if you can get that right and we can stop the people just going around going, you know, you can't climb ladders, you can't abseil down buildings, you can't do blah, 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 blah. Like, everything is possible if we understand risk tolerance and mitigate risk in the right way. And that, I think, is one of the fundamental things we have to shift in the profession. So I think safety is it's a massively broad church. And I think, you know, you generally find the higher the risk of the environment, or the bigger the activities, or the more public the stunt or show, the greater level of buy-in to that there is. You know, if you watch Dawn Wall, the free climber, and he climbs the route up in Yosemite.
Mm-hmm.
Really interested in that. So everybody assumes that he's just a nutcase who loves taking risks and like has no value of his own life.
Mm-hmm.
And he says a really important thing in there. He says, you know, I know every inch of that. I have planned that route. I have prepped. I have thought about it. I've dreamt about it. You know, I've practiced all of the moves. And that is risk management. You know, fundamentally, the thing that he is doing, he could fall off and he could die, right? You can't change that. We can't, you know, there's no anti-gravity machine underneath him that's going to keep him safe. He's making that choice to do it, but he's in such a prepared environment. I think of the Red Arrows. If you try to do a risk assessment for the Red Arrows and go, right, we're going to take these essentially two flying bombs and fly them straight towards each other, and at the last minute, one of them's going to do a really comical roll and, you know, away they go and it looks amazing. And you're going to stand thousands of people underneath them. Somebody somewhere, you know, a safety person with their just pure safety hat on would go, can't do that. But you can, right? This is all the things, like, we should be the profession that's full of possibilities, and we are enabling these organizations or whatever the outfit is to go forth and do that. And I think that is... That's where I want to see the profession. I want to see us talking in that enabling language, in that we are part of achieving the end goals or the purposes of the organisations. You know, you look at London 2012, you can build an Olympics without, you know, people dying as a result of the construction phase. And then you go to Qatar for 2022 and we're not able to repeat that.
Mm.
And there's some difference in the values in the way that that's being done. And that fundamentally shouldn't be the case. Once you know you can achieve something, that should be the standard and that should be our baseline, and we should be working towards that. And I think those are the kind of things that we should be talking about.
Mm.
And we should be talking about that in the positive way that people can buy into. And I think, to answer your point on collaboration, because I know I've gone off on a wild tangent, but I've had fun with it, so apologies. But we need to collaborate, and we need to be able to understand our limitations and not take it. Like, I don't, you know, safety professionals I meet fall into kind of three camps. There's the people that have the broadest shoulders in the world that take everything on, and you think you're going to struggle because you can't do everything. You need to work out, you know, who it is you need to go and get the support from, or how you bring, you know, the right team together. Then there's a safety professional who's just fed up because they're banging their head against a brick wall because they can't get the buy-in. And you think, fundamentally, like, what are we lacking there to be able to do it? And sometimes it's not the individual, it's the organization they're in, but there's some lack in there. And then there's the third that kind of, you're not sure they really believe it, but they're doing it. And they're kind of right, okay, well, you know, this is what I do. But there's not the authenticity there. And, you know, it's, you know, I've done safety for somebody, but actually, like, what's the value? What's the purpose? What are we actually putting in, and what's the difference that we're making? And I think if we can get people to that front, to be the kind of people that are actually right, I can take on stuff, I can enable an organization, but I know how to do it because I've got this rich support network around me, and I know where to get expertise from. I know how to translate information that's of value out of academia and pull it into, you know, meaningful pilots within organizations, and to trial and condition, and then to scale. That's what we really need to do. And the conversation, I think, needs to move around from safety and all of this absence talk to actually this is how we effectively mitigate and manage risk. And I think if we can get back to effective risk management, we're in a much better place for the profession as a whole. And it is a big, broad church, like David said, you know, and I think we can't lose sight of that. You know, the more of that that's in, the bigger the melting pot, the more diversity of thought that's in the safety profession, and the broader our vision to look to those people for help, support, guidance, and exchange of knowledge, the richer will become as an end result of it. And that's where I want to see us go. And I want us to leave behind this, you know, and I know we have in certain areas, but, you know, this stereotype of the guy that rocks up with all his PPE and the clipboard, and he's got a whole list of things to check off. And you kind of go, well, okay, you've done all your checks, great. What's changed?
Mm.
And if nothing's changed, then like, why are we doing it? And I just think that I was having a conversation with our good friend Crystal, and I let her into a little secret that I don't, there's a little part of me that doesn't want to change the image of the safety profession. Mm-hmm. Because when I rock up somewhere, people are surprised because I'm not the stereotype that they are expecting. And if we manage to smash the stereotype apart and we get safety to where it should be and where I truly want it to be, if I'm being honest and serious, I'm going to lose a little bit of magic, you know. So from a purely selfish point of view, like, you know, you kind of go, well, is that really what I want to see? But it is the right, it's the right approach for us. And we've got to be, you know, we've got to be modern, and we've got to challenge what's gone before, but we've got to also respect the bits that are pertinent and irrelevant. You know, the Health and Safety at Work Act stands from 74 because it's a good bit of legislation, right?
Yeah.
There's other bits of legislation that have been rubbish, and they've been updated 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 times in that space of time because they were poor. You know, the basic constructs of hierarchy of control, really solid. You know, maybe we're not in elimination very often, but they are a very solid set of principles. And the more solid our principles are, and the more transferable they are across industry, sector, country, globe, continent, wherever you want to think about it. I mean, planets, if Elon Musk gets his way, you know, go watch his documentary if you haven't. It's amazing. He's going to win that out of all the people trying to get space travel, because he genuinely wants to do it for the right reasons. Like, he's invested in it. It's fascinating. Yeah, I think that's what we need. We need people to challenge and to think about things differently.
I was really fortunate on Friday. It was bank holiday in the UK on Friday, and we had our Project Meletium call. And to be fair, to begin with, there was only one person that turned up. So I was there, and Graham Wells turned up, and then after about half an hour, a lady called Elisa came along, and they're both really, really great individuals. But I was having a chat with Graham about a particular issue that I've got. I've got two pretty decent sized businesses I'm working with. One where the MD is just totally bought into it, and he basically says that, you know, his role in life is to support the people in his business to be better. Okay. And he just sees his function totally as to support others. And the other one, the MD is quite an awkward individual. And my relationship with him isn't great. And we were talking, and I just sort of said, you know, I'm half thinking, have I fouled a little bit, because my relationship with the MD isn't where it could be, and how are we going to push things forward unless I get that relationship right? And Graham just came up with, and he gave us this perfect answer. He says, in actual fact, your relationship with the MD isn't that important, but the MD's relationship with health and safety, that's the important bit, you know, and him really getting and really understanding, you know, what it's about. That's the important relationship, and that's the one. And when I sat back, I thought, well, I've actually done something on that then. You know, he is thinking a little bit differently. So even though we're not getting on, he is thinking differently. And so, you know, so I thought, but I don't think, you know, there's not a massive amount of health and safety professionals out there that are actually thinking that way at all.
You know? Well, I think the interesting thing for me there, Colin, would be, right, you know, what's the successful outcome there? That you see an improvement in the way safety is delivered, or that you see the creation of safety in that organization, but you and the MD, you know, never go for a beer and a curry by the end of your project, yeah. and you haven't got that relationship, or you and him get on really well, you're able to go for a beer and a curry and have a good chat about, you know, the cricket as we started off before here, or baseball as Dave has been teaching us about. But there isn't the improvement culturally within that organization around occupational safety and health. And you know, Graham steered you in a really great way there, that that's the importance of the outcome. And I think, you know, I've been speaking to people recently about like how you view the profession, and I keep thinking back to like the top table in organizations, you should see occupational safety and health as your goalkeeper on your team sheet. So whenever a manager is picking his team for that week's game, the one certainty he's got is the goalkeeper. You know, that is the position that is always there, that isn't going to change, that is, you know, reliable, dependable, you know exactly what they're there to do, etc. And then whether you're playing 3-4-2 or some of the other magic, you know, 4-4-2 or any of the other magic kind of European things that have come over now and changed the game slightly, the goalkeeper's there. And it just feels to me that safety should always be, you know, that element that when an organization's thinking about whatever it is, a new project, a new construction opportunity, you know, a merger or an acquisition or whatever it is, that's on their team sheet. And we should be thinking in the same way as like, well, what are we building as our team sheet from safety professionals? You know, who's on there that we need to be working with? Who is it that's in our team? How have we got that relationship with finance, with HR, with procurement, with operations? There'll be people screaming now going, you haven't mentioned this and you haven't mentioned that. But you get the gist of what I mean. And I think that is the way that's the way we do it. That's the way you become the enablers. That's the way you have to, we have to be aligned. We have to seek that alignment. And we also have to go and understand from other people's viewpoints. You have to go and sit in a chair, you know, and imagine yourself as the ops manager and understand the pressures, etc., to then go, right, well, how does safety fit into that? And, you know, whether it's the program or the purchase or the finance person, whoever it is, like, how does it all interlink? Because once you start to understand that interconnectedness of everything, you can start to weave safety in with it. If you haven't got that, you're just pushing at people and asking for more and more and more. And the less, you know, people don't have more capacity. So actually, how do we make it within what they're doing already? And I think those are some of the golden links through.
And I think we have to back up a little bit, gentlemen. I think what you're saying is extremely important. I think what you're saying is a vision of what should be. I don't argue with that at all. The idea of safety in the boardroom is something that we have to push very strongly. But if I look around at people I'm dealing with on a daily basis, safety and health, quote, safety and health professionals, unquote, or safety and health professionals in inverted commas, to use the British expression. I worry a little bit that capacity that you're expounding on is not truly there amongst many safety and health professionals. There are people there that have this. And there are a lot of people there. There are a lot of my colleagues and friends that I respect that have this knowledge and skills, have this competency to be able to deal and talk the language of the boardroom in various different cultures around the world. But are we equipping the safety and health professional to be able to do this? Do we give them the knowledge and the skills? We can't give them the experience. They have to get that on their own. We can make opportunities available for that experience. But do we give them the competencies where they have a knowledge set, they have a skill set to be able to work with people, to be able to work at a level where they can convince people to make this kind of change. And my feeling is we need to go back and we need to work with vocational technical institutes. We need to work with universities. We need to work with organizations such as IOS, such as NABOS, such as the British Safety Council and other organizations around the world to figure out what people need and how they need it to create safety globally, to create globally within a company, universally within a company. And, you know, it's easy to get to teach someone, for example, to do the math, to assess a risk, to determine whether or not control measures are working, determine residual risks and move forward. But so what? How do we make that giant step to basically have the ability to have a CEO that believes in what we're doing? The pandemic showed me, and I believe it showed Stuart and others rather demonstratively, that we had people that said, I know what I'm doing as far as dealing with the mental health of my colleagues in the workplace. And if they come to me, I'm going to be able to help them. And if you ask a little bit further, well, who do you turn them over to? And they say, well, no, I've had a course and I know what I'm doing and I can deal with that. And in my mind, that stoppage of the transition to get someone to a certain level of help is a failure of the system. I remember when I took my first aid course years and years and years ago, they talked about the idea of a course where you're going to be trained, you're going to be given the knowledge and skills to be able to help someone until someone more competent than you comes on the scene and then you turn them over to someone else. It never ended with me in the area of first aid. And in my mind, in the area of occupational safety and health, it doesn't end with me either. Mm-hmm. There is a referral pattern. There is also a pattern where people have to be able to come back. But that referral pattern, for example, in occupational health, is not strong. There's been a number of papers written by some very, very good academics in the UK who have basically, in Nottingham University, there's a group there, there's a special group there that I've worked with. And they're basically saying, well, do people know where their abilities stop and where we need to seek additional help? And if we're going to achieve what Stuart is talking about, which I firmly believe in, and I would never not support that premise that Stuart is putting forward, but we need to have that background. We need to be able to, we need to start now. It's not something we needed to start in 5 or 10 years from now. I don't think we need to go through a huge amount of curriculum planning. We need to get academics together. We need to get professionals together that are dealing with education of safety and health professionals and not look at the basics of safety and health, but where we can grow and how we can create safety in an enterprise. We need to look at how we create the leadership that is going to promote safety and health. The other caveat, the other thing that I'm thinking about when Stuart talked about this guy that was free climbing in Yosemite. I used to do mountain rescue. I was captain of a mountain rescue team in the state of Maine many, many years ago. And we had these people that would free climb and they would go up these extremely difficult routes. And oftentimes they would get themselves hurt because they didn't go through the planning that Stuart was talking about earlier. They didn't go through the risk assessment. There's a certain amount of, I want to do it, it's there, and I'm going to take the risk, and they do it. And they get themselves hurt. The unfortunate thing is, who are you going to call? Mm-hmm. And it's not Ghostbusters, but it's a mountain rescue team. And
I was just about to shout Ghostbusters as well.
and you know, it's like I will never, ever dismiss the heroics of a soldier or a sailor or a Marine or an Air Force person who is doing something extraordinary for their colleagues and their country. But at the same time, when they do something crazy and they get themselves hurt, they shout medic and or corpsman or whatever it may be, and then someone needs to go and get them. And one has to think about the entire infrastructure necessary to support this kind of situation as well. Mm-hmm. So when this person is climbing these extremely difficult routes without the personal protective equipment. They're free climbing. They don't have the ability to fall and dangle on a rope. And they get hung up somewhere. Then the competencies necessary to get them are also kind of tricky as well. I'm not belittling what you're saying at all, Stuart. I have all the world of respect for you. But it worries me a little bit sometimes because I've been in that situation where I've had to get people out of hot water.
Well, I think this goes back to there's a human nature point, isn't there, in this, right? So there is, you know, I am convinced that 99% of people that you know come to harm or injure themselves are not doing it with malice or intent to do so or anything else. I think a high proportion of those people are doing it for the right reasons. They are trying to get a job done. They are, you know, going above and beyond in the course of for their organization, or they are, you know, and they outstep their bounds of competency, probably without knowing. And that for me is something that you know, this comes back to how do we communicate and get people to buy into the premise of health and safety being that enabler to do your work rather than something to just ignore and shut down or run through a checklist that has no value.
Or maybe Stuart, excuse me, maybe outside of their control.
Yeah, true. There is that.
Yeah, you and I have been sailing together, and we've sailed on fairly calm waters on a lake. I'm a storm sailor. If you ask Marianne, my wife, about me and sailing, she will say, you know, you've got a wind howling at 50, 60 miles an hour, and you got the sea running one way and the tide running the other way and the wind blowing another way and everything else. And she said, when you're on the helm, you're in your element, and you've got the leather between your teeth, and you're going to go for it. And I have a huge love for the sea and can manage that kind of thing. Okay. But also, in the back of my mind, I'm constantly calculating. I'm not calculating the risk numbers, but I'm calculating. I'm saying to myself, okay, in this situation, if this happens, my mind slows down a little bit. I'm sort of looking forward into where I'm going with things. And I'm adjusting. I'm putting in place control measures and measuring the control measures to see if they're effective or not, so I can get the ship or the boat or whatever it may be through that storm and get it done safely. And I enjoy it. And I know I'm at risk. Am I at total risk? Do I have a life jacket on? Yes. Am I attached to the boat? Yes. Do I have communications equipment? I have everything I need, but I'm at risk when I do it. And it's a choice I make. And that risk you talked about earlier, Stuart, that idea that if we don't take risks, we're not going to move ahead in life. We're not going to change things. We're also maybe not going to enjoy life. But we need to have the competencies to be able to know where that stops. We in society need to be able to say, okay, the barriers are down, the lights are flashing, the train is going to be coming through. It's not the time to run across the track. Okay, it's not the time to play chicken with a locomotive or an electric train coming in the other direction that's going very, very fast. We need to understand, as you said earlier, Stuart, where these boundaries are. But the question I come back to is, do we have a sufficient number of people to be able to work with people to allow them to go through the mindset, to be able to establish where these boundaries are, where their personal boundaries are, and how they can instill that in others, so that if they decide they're going to take a risk outside of the workplace, or if they decide they're going to take a risk inside of the workplace, at that point in time, you know, I mean, will I ever be negative about a firefighter who's been heroic in saving someone from a building or saving someone from a situation? No, I will never be negative about it, but I would hope that they've gone through the same sort of process that I go through when I go sailing, and that there is the ability, and we can instill in the firefighter, we can instill in the fisherman, we can instill in the miner, we can instill in the factory worker, we can instill in the policeman in the street, the police officer in the street, this sort of thing, where we get them to look at it from a perspective of, yes, I have to react quickly, but am I doing everything I need to do to protect myself and protect others? And I'm not sure as a profession we're there yet. I'm not sure the education we're giving people as safety and health professionals, yes, there's the boardroom side of it, but there's the practical side of it as well. And I think we need to create that level of education.
I really agree with what you're saying there. And, you know, I was fortunate enough only 2 years ago to work with an industry that I'm really close with in the UK, which is the quarry industry, to sort of update some of the modules in their degree course for their people that are going to become quarry managers. And I think, you know, one of the things that was really quite shocking was how little was there, you know, before I was asked to look at it. And I think, you know, I suppose one of the questions, you know, for you guys is whose responsibility is it then to influence these organizations? Is it organizations like IOSH and the health and safety professionals, or is it industry? Should it be the industry that's actually pushing for this change within the organizations, or is it a bit of both? I don't know. What do you think?
I think that if you put all the responsibility into either one camp, you come out with a bad outcome. Mm-hmm. So I think if you try and say, right, well, this is IOSH, IIRSM, British Safety Council, you know, name whatever the body is, you know, whether it's in America, South Africa, blah, blah, blah. Them saying, right, here, industry, this is what you need to do, is not a great way of doing it. Industry saying, getting together with industry and saying, this is what we'd like to achieve, is good. It's probably better than just the other bodies that I mentioned trying to come up with something and pushing it out. But actually the kind of the gold standard or the Rolls Royce of it is that collaboration, is that inter-collaboration of the organizations, the institutions, and also some form of representation from the people within it. And I think that then becomes actually something that's meaningful and probably far longer lasting and has a greater impact. I chatted to a chap yesterday who works for the European version of the CAA, and I can't remember the acronym for it now, but he was working in safety promotions, which I thought was a very interesting job title. And basically what they're doing as a regulator is saying, right, well, here's this wonderful, you know, co-collaborated with the regulator and all the people in the industry set of rules and regulations. It's a really lovely glossy PDF that's X pages long. But how do we break that down into something that's easy to communicate, that people can understand, so they, you know, they feel it, they know what they need to do, they know how to do it. And they were doing that through safety promotion. So, you know, how do we turn that into a bite-sized video? How do we turn that into something that, you know, people could share on a TikTok or a YouTube or a whatever other kind of cool platforms there are that, you know, people utilize? And I love that idea that somebody's got a job title of safety promotion in a way that, you know, we're leaning on, like, what are we learning from marketing? What are we learning from, you know, some of the new technologies that are hooking people in? And actually that's what we need to do with the safety. Yes, you know, someone somewhere needs to understand the compliance elements of this complex piece of work, but there is a sub-level of that to make it understood, known and felt via a different way of communicating. And I was like, that's just pretty cool. And I thought, actually, that's where I'd like to see us go with that type of stuff. Because actually, that's how you do it, Colin. I think you have to have the engagement from all the relevant people at the party, mm-hmm. You know, and then somebody has to be able to distill it down into something that people can take away and implement.
Mm-hmm. I think there is another perspective, perhaps a little bit of a metaphor. You know, I recently visited Rome and was looking at some of the ancient sites and was amazed at some of the way that the tiles have been put together in Rome and have lasted centuries at this point and you know, millennium virtually. You know, and I say to myself, Well, when you look at the way tiles are put together and they become art, if you look at an individual tile, it's just a little stone or a little piece of ceramic. But if you look at the way it's put together and how each of the elements interrelates with the other element and then becomes something extraordinary. I was looking at the ancient port of Rome, which was on the sea, which is basically landlocked at this point in time, and saw these wonderful mosaics that were built very, very, very early, you know, in Europe. And in a sense, when we're looking and when we're looking at the future of safety and health, I don't think we're looking at a safety and health professional. I think what we're looking at is we're looking at a mosaic of people with different sets of knowledge and skills and competencies that will somehow work together to create this piece of art. And we also need to look at leadership that will embrace this idea that we have people just like the three of us come at Safety and Health with different knowledge and skills and experiences. But we need to be able to find a way to structure this mosaic, to say where the sides of this are and what piece, what role this particular piece will have and what role that piece will have. But we also have to be able to look at the larger picture and make sure that larger picture is going to be something that, well, in my mind, being in Rome, I was looking at it was pleasurable. But what we need to look at is the larger picture coming together and helping to create the sort of dynamic that Stuart was alluding to earlier of where we should be going as with where we should be going as a future, where we should be going, what we should be looking forward. But I can't see that one individual can carry this thing. It has to be a team. It has to be dynamic. It has to be a team, not a team of stars, but a star team, where people are working together, people are interfacing, people are supporting each other, people are recognizing their limitations, but turn to other people and say, well, I can help you here, but maybe you should turn to this other guy or this other woman and they can help you there. And that sort of collaborative work where there isn't this sort of thing where saying, hey, listen, you're going to step on my toes. Rather than we're going to integrate what we're doing, we're going to depend on each other, we're going to move it forward, including top management is where we're going to see, in my mind, the growth of the profession. But again, we have to go back to who is training these individuals that are taking on these different roles. Mm-hmm. And are we training them to be in silos, or are we training them to build tunnels? Or are we training them to actually create the glue? There's a different word for it, but the glue that's going to hold these different elements together. Mm-hmm. This becomes extremely important.
No, I think you're totally right. Hey guys, I'm really aware of the time. I don't know how you're fit. You're probably getting a bit tight now. I don't know, but it's been a great conversation. Have you got any sort of bits you just want to close off with? Is there any points that you'd like to get across at the end?
I mean, David Gold's beautiful mosaic is a really lovely thing for us to ponder upon, I think, and think about. I think it's a really nice way to pull that together. I think, you know, my genuine kind of battle cry, I suppose, would be like, let's bring the profession back together. Let's start to think about what it is that we're actually all trying to achieve, and you know why we are trying to do that, and use our collective voice to influence at the right levels and in the right positions to make the change. And I think that is, you know, anybody anywhere on any stage of their occupational safety and health journey can do that. And anybody within organizations can do that. You know, we're starting to see the power of the person again, And I think we really need to get back to, you know, a human-centered approach for safety. And that's not to say kick out all of the systems. It's not to say, you know, rip everything up and start again. But it is to say let's shift the emphasis of that focus. You know, work provides people with, you know, with safety, with purpose, with elements that genuinely have positive impacts on their health and well-being. And that's what it should be across everything in all work environments, wherever you are. And that's what I fundamentally believe. And that's what I'd like to see the profession as a whole pushing towards. And I'd like to see us to be building that together and actually sharing the experiences of the stuff that works and challenging the stuff that's long in the tooth or doesn't serve any purpose, doing it in a way that's constructive so that we can fundamentally, you know, make a step change that ultimately leads to an improved environment for people to work in, and as a sub, you know, as a sub benefit of that, improves the kind of the broader culture. You know, that's what I'd like to see. I know it might sound utopian, but that's the wish, really. That's how I'd like to leave it.
It's not utopian at all. And when you use this, you know, when you use the expression long in the tooth from the almost the day we're born, or at least when we get our second teeth, our teeth are getting longer all of the time. But it also drives me back to think, well, we need to start shaping the youth. We need to start shaping younger people in this direction. One of the things I think about was it the, I don't want to get this wrong, I think it was the Robbins report that actually went, is that the correct terminology? Robbins report, yeah, that created the HSE, that created the whole idea of a capstone organization, an executive that's going to capture not only occupational safety, but occupational health. And in the country that I'm sitting in right now, in Switzerland, there is a capstone organization. And that capstone organization has sub-organizations. In the sub-organizations, you have occupational hygienists, you have ergonomists, you have occupational psychologists, you have safety professionals, you have health professionals, you have all of these different people. And instead of taking, again, I use the concept of the silo approach, where there's an organization for occupational health, an organization for occupational safety, an organization for ergonomics, an organization for occupational psychology. I would hope that somewhere along the line that there are going to be organizations that embrace all of these different organizations and see how we work together and how we create it. Now, perhaps we need the push from academia. Perhaps we need the push from industry. Perhaps we need the push from a variety of different places. But we need to harness our energy. You know, when I was teaching at the University of Cheikh Anta Diop in Senegal, and I had all these occupational doctors, and I was the only non-doctor in the room teaching them about occupational, particularly about psychosocial issues at work. And I said, well, these guys have all gone through medical school. These guys have all done 8 years of education. These guys all have a degree where they're very, very proud of, and they're saving lives. And here comes this guy from outside of Africa, from outside of Senegal, from outside of Africa, who speaks French with a bit of an accent, who's telling them what they should be doing. But here I was, a safety and health professional with some knowledge in their particular area, and we were working together how we could strengthen their skill set. And I think if our professions, and I will use professions rather than profession, if I may, Stuart, if our professions are going to grow, that we need to have this cross-fertilization. A common friend of ours, a common friend of Stuart's of mine, has a couple of degrees in psychology, and he's also a safety and health professional, and he has a very dynamic background in leadership and leadership management. And in him alone, we see two or three different professions merging and coming together and seeing the direction forward. But that's just one example of a couple of different professions that have become one. And I think we need to embrace this idea or this philosophy. As we've said during this call, we can't do it alone. We need to be able to signpost. We need to be able to refer. We need to know where our boundaries are. But we need to have the education, the wherewithal, and the confidence to be able to say, how do we build this team? How do we build this dynamic? How do we, our ultimate goal is not even to be here. Our ultimate goal is to have a completely integrated society where safety and health is not necessary. But in order to achieve that ultimate goal, we need to be looking forward, using all of the different knowledge sets and the skill sets. And again, there has to be some sort of mechanism where we pull that together. And I don't see, I think the Robbins report was an attempt at that, bringing health and safety together. The Swiss are doing it, but there's not a lot of examples in the world where this sort of thing, I think the Irish have a health and safety authority that also look at health and safety. But all of these different professions I mentioned earlier, we need to be able to figure out a way to get the strengths of each one of them and also not have a situation where we're threatened by someone else's profession, but how do we work together? Like the analogy, Colin, that you, or not the analogy, but what you suggested earlier about the medical profession. You have medical doctors, you have nurses, you have lab techs, you have x-ray technicians, and they're all working together to one common goal, to save lives or to promote the health of individuals or to keep people healthy in a given sort of situation. Are we following that model in the field of occupational safety and health? And if not, I think we need to strive to be able to do that.
Brilliant. Gents, I mean, you've definitely got me thinking about loads of different things there. And you know, it's always an absolute pleasure to spend some time chatting, but from my perspective, actually just listening to you guys, and it's been absolutely wonderful. So, you know, thank you ever so much for taking some time to give your views and to give your opinions, and hopefully that this this episode will create some debate in the same way that your paper is designed to get people talking, to create debate. So, gents, thank you ever so much.
Thank you for the opportunity to do this. It's been a pleasure. And I very much appreciate the fact, Colin, that you're striving to create a little bit of diversity and a little bit of divergent thinking, if you like. Mm-hmm. But our goals are the same, but you're trying to pull together different strands. And I think it's brilliant if this is done, and if this could be repeated in a lot of different places in a lot of different languages to get people at least to consider different perspectives as we move forward.
David, Stuart, thank you so much for coming on the show. That last hour was absolute gold for me. It really challenged me. It made me think. It made me think about what I do from a health and safety perspective, you know, how I need to, you know, look at the way I provide support and services into my clients, into the businesses. But I think really as well, it's a conversation that just needs to happen. You know, we need, as a health and safety profession, to be having really sensible discussions about where we go, you know, to remain relevant. Because if we don't, then people are going to get more frustrated. You know, people are frustrated with health and safety anyway. You know, they see it as a blocker. You know, we've got to start to be seen more as enabling, you know, more as a part of a business that works for success rather than just deals with failure. And I think that's really important for us to consider and to think about. I love, you know, when we're talking about, you know, the role of GPs and how they just don't do everything. You know, they turn to other health and safety professionals to provide services. Well, I think we need to get better at that, you know, and we need to be able to know our limitations, to know where we, what we can and can't achieve, and to have a bank of people that we can turn to actually help us provide the right support that our business needs. And don't try and do it all. You know, we don't need to do it all. What we need to do is we need to be facilitators. We need to be coordinators. We need to, you know, have our input. There's our technical input we need to have, but we also need to, you know, need to be seen as the go-to place for help and assistance and results. And if we can achieve that, then it will be great. You know, those, the three episodes that you've done have been absolutely wonderful. you know, finding out a bit about you, you know, the paper that you put together, you know, is just really fascinating, and it's something that people must read. You know, you must have a look at that and, you know, and use it as a discussion document to drive your thinking forward. And finally, you know, become part of that change, become part of a successful future for what is such an exciting and interesting profession. Anyway, look, thanks for listening. You know, we'll catch up again really soon. Just a little word from our sponsors. Project Meletium is a community for people that are, you know, if you're new to the profession, you know, you want to get involved, then it's a great place to come along. If you're at a crossroads in your career and you're not sure where to go, or if you're towards the end of your career and you want to give something back, then Project Meletium is the community for you. We have weekly community calls. We have monthly sessions on book club, psychology, and also we have a quarterly mastermind. So please get along and come and enjoy a community where all the members within the community are all growing as individuals. Their careers have improved. You know, it's a really, really great place to be. Anyway, you know, thanks a lot to all the work that you do at Project Meletium. Bye for now.
Thanks for listening to the Interesting Health and Safety podcast. You can follow and engage on Facebook and LinkedIn by searching the Interesting Health and Safety community, or go to www.influentialmg.com. And remember, let's make health and safety as important as everything else we do in business. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guests and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Colin Nottage.